Our text from this morning comes from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5. And I love the Gospel of Mark more than any of the other Gospels for lots of reasons. One reason is this thing called the secret of Mark. And that's where Jesus would do a miracle, and then he would tell people, now don't say anything about this miracle I did. Don't tell anybody, because until I come back from the dead, they won't get the significance of what I've done. They won't realize who I am and why I did this. And of course, every time he said that, the first thing people did is they would run out the doors and they would tell everybody. So it's this kind of paradox. Everybody's spreading the gospel and it's great, but you almost see Jesus just shaking his head a little bit. But another reason that I love the Gospel of Mark is this plot device called the Markan sandwich. And what it is Mark starts us off on a story, and he gets us right to the suspenseful part where we're like, well, what happens next? And then he just stops, and he says, okay, we're going to take a break from this story, and we're going to go tell another story. And while you're listening to that story, that other story that sounds like it would be completely unrelated, you find that it actually ties in to the first story. It actually connects a little bit. The themes are the same. What's happening inside the people is the same. And then he returns and finishes up that suspenseful moment. It's almost like, have you ever had someone tell you something really important and they're getting right to the good part and their phone rings? And it builds this anticipation in you. They say, oh, there was something that happened at work the other day and the cops were called and I think someone was hurt, and then their phone rings and you go, well, what happened? Why was there so much chaos going on? Did somebody get arrested? What happened? Ignore the phone call. Finish the story. And it builds that anticipation in us. And as we read these Markan sandwiches, so to speak, it builds that anticipation in us. But that pales in comparison to the anticipation of the people who were in the story, the people for whom their story got interrupted. And I think you'll see what we mean in a second when we turn in Mark. Maybe it's because I've been spoiled a little bit by all the information that's instantly available on the internet or communication over text that just happens so quickly, but I want to know the rest of that story quickly. We're going to take a look at what I'm talking about in Mark chapter 5, starting with verse 21. And while you're turning there, I'll give you a little bit of background. Jesus is doing something in the lives of two different women. One's a 12-year-old girl, and the other one is quite a bit older. That's Mark chapter 5, starting with verse 21. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came. And when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" Now, do you feel the anticipation in this story? Put yourself in the shoes of Jairus. Your daughter is dying. And he's a respected synagogue leader, and we know from some of the other stories with Jesus that the people in the synagogue, the religious leaders of that day, they were a little bit intimidated by Jesus. Some of the things he was saying and things he was doing, these were the power players. They had all this power and authority that they often abused. But here's a guy, he's not worried about any of that. He's not worried about, oh, I can't be seen with Jesus because he's kind of a controversial figure right now. No, he says, "My daughter is dying, but I know Jesus can save her." So everything else off the table, he's going to do whatever he can to save his daughter. And wouldn't you? Wouldn't you move heaven and earth to save one of your children? And you can feel the anticipation in this because Jesus is on his way to go heal the little girl. But he's interrupted. A woman who has suffered for many years with bleeding, she's touched the hem of his garment that she might be saved. And it depends on the translation you're reading, whether you're reading NIV, King James, or whatever. That word, that she might be healed, it might say that she might be healed, that she might be made well. But it's the same word in the Greek that's used for the little girl who the father wants her to be saved. And this woman who touches the hem of Jesus' garment and wants to be saved. It's the same word that we might appropriately render as saved. And it means not saved like we talk about salvation, but it means saved from your affliction, saved from whatever it is that's plaguing you. It's saved in a medical, clinical kind of sense. But it's the same word used for both of them. So we see our first tie-in. These two stories are connected a little bit. These two girls need to be saved. But the story doesn't really seem fair, honestly, does it? Because here's Jairus. He's sort of gotten in line. He's went to go see Jesus. And if I was Jairus, I'd be thinking, hey, lady, you cut in line. Make an appointment. Jesus is busy. You can't just cut in line like that. And who told you you could cut to the front? If I was Jairus, I might be pleading with Jesus, say, hey, I'm no offense, Jesus, but I feel like my daughter's condition is a little bit more serious than this woman. She suffered for many years, but she's still alive. My daughter's about to die. Could we maybe come back later to this woman? If this was triage in a hospital, we would say, obviously, the girl who's about to die should be treated first before the woman who interrupted. But that's not what Jesus does. He stops. Now, he could have kept going. He knew power had gone out of him. He could have just thought, well, good for her. I'm on my way somewhere. She touched the hem of my garment. She was healed. Great job. You're healed. He could have just kept going. He could have kept walking and said, the woman behind me was just healed, made a declaration about it, and kept going. Kind of a drive-by healing, so to speak. But that's not what he does. He doesn't just treat her as someone to be checked off of a list. And we can learn a lot from Jesus about how we handle the interruptions in our own lives by the way that he handles this interruption. Look at what Jesus does. In verse 30, he asked, who touched my clothes? And in verse 31, the disciples are just floored by this question. Well, Jesus, everybody's touching you. You're kind of a big deal. Everybody's crowded around you. If someone's not touching you, it's only because they can't get to you because of all the other people who are at you. So everybody's touching you. They ask Jesus, why would you even ask who's touching you? Everybody is. But Jesus wants to make sure that this encounter is not just a checked off of a list, not just a casual encounter. She's going to have this encounter with Jesus, this healing. He's going to make sure it's done right. So the first thing he does, Jesus stops in his busy schedule to make time for an individual. Now that's astounding. I don't know about you, but I know I'm busy. I assume you're probably busy too. We're all busy with different things. You have kids, you have grandkids, you have work, you have other commitments. You have hobbies, if you can squeeze them in. Maybe you laugh at that. I know sometimes people talk about sleep. What's sleep? Sometimes it's hard to even get any of that in. So you know what I'm talking about. We're all busy, but you look at Jesus. Who's busier than Jesus? But he stops what he's doing, and he's doing important stuff, much more important than you and I. But he stops what he's doing to focus on this one individual need. And who here just hates to be interrupted when you're in the zone? You know what I'm talking about, right? The zone when you're working on something and you're so focused. And maybe it was something you didn't really want to do, but you got started on it. And once you got started on it, that was the hard part. You were over that hump. And now you're working on it, and the ideas, the creativity is flowing. You're in a routine. Your hands and your feet are moving without you even thinking about them. You're like a machine. You're going. You've got that momentum. And then someone or something interrupts, and you feel like at the time, this is not really a valid interruption. This is not something that needs to stop me from what I'm doing. This thing could have waited. But we see in Jesus that he stopped. He stopped everything. I've told y'all before that a lot of times God tells me something through my daughter, little moments. And the other day, well, it was actually a few weeks ago, she had been given these necklaces, these little bead necklaces, and she's wearing them like all over her neck. She's got them on her arms, and she's at one end of the living room, and I'm at the other. And we're getting ready for school. You know, we have to go. We're trying to get there on time, do the little activities. We're trying to get ready for school, but here she is. She wants to play, and she's at the other end of the living room, and she's got these necklaces on, and yells, "Look, Daddy, I'm pretty!" And she comes running towards me and gives me this huge hug. Now, how can you not stop and embrace that and take that in? I'm not going to say, well, no, I don't have time for you. No, you have to say, well, yes, you're always pretty to Daddy, and you get ready for school. But you have to take at least a minute for that. There's so many things that we just don't feel like we don't have time for interruptions. And then those interruptions happen, and God shows you that sometimes there are things that are more important than whatever it is you were doing. Secondly, Jesus insists on meaningful contact. Now, those of you with Facebook accounts, you can probably relate to this. Or if you don't have a Facebook account, you've at least heard of this, that we have really cheapened the term friend in our culture. That friend doesn't necessarily mean anything. And we kind of cheapened the term like, because someone can post a picture of a cloud and we click like. Let me tell you, you click like on a picture of a cloud, that doesn't mean that like you've shared a moment with that person. That wasn't like meaningful contact necessarily. Not to say that we can't have meaningful contact on the social media, and that happens sometimes, but that's kind of become a substitute for us. Email is a little bit better, but I tell you, I get random emails from some people that I guess is my distant family. I don't really know them. There's apparently another Travis Crocker out there, and I'm getting his emails from family that I've never met. And they send me these emails, and it's always something that's kind of important. It's time-sensitive information. And it's stuff like, hey, are you coming to the thing on Saturday at 8:30? Are you going to pick up somebody on your way? Are you going to bring this to the gathering? And I've emailed back and said, lady, I don't know you. I've never met you. But the other Travis Crocker probably needs this email. You should probably get the right address so that he can know that he's supposed to be there at 8:30 and pick up Aunt Becky and bring a casserole. I don't know. But like, that's probably important. And then every time I do that, they write back and they say, that Travis, he's such a joker. And they don't take it seriously. Like, no, really, I'm not the Travis you're looking for. But it's like they're just checking it off of a list, because like I feel like if they really cared if the other Travis Crocker made it to the gathering, they'd probably get his email address right. Surely this guy's called at some point and said, hey, why don't y'all ever email me and let me know when we're getting together? And they said, well, we did. So I feel like they're just kind of checking that off of a list. It's not meaningful contact. But Jesus stops everything. He just stops everything and makes sure that he spends time with this woman. He seeks her out in the crowd. Who touched me? Well, everybody. No, there's one specific one that touched me. And we're going to have this encounter, and it's going to be on Jesus' terms. And when he does encounter her, she's saved. She was saved physically. The word for saved, yeah, she was saved physically, but there's a much more deep and meaningful kind of salvation that Jesus wants to impart to her. Third, he responds warmly with peace. His reaction is peaceful, but he also gives peace to her. Let's look in verses 32 through 34. But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. So after he found her in the crowd, because he was intentional about this, he heard her trembling confession, and he responded with affirmation. Now, we couldn't really blame Jesus, really, if he had said, look, I decide how this healing thing happens. I'm the one carrying it around. I decide who I'm going to heal and who I'm not going to heal. We couldn't really blame him for that. Or if he had turned around and said, look, you just tapped into the power of the God of the universe. You're playing with fire. You got to be a little more careful with that. But that's not what Jesus does. He's very peaceful. He is calm with her. And he says that her faith has healed her. Now, in Jesus' day, there were a lot of traveling magicians peddling little temporary remedies. A lot of different magicians, a lot of different false prophets. But Jesus is making it clear to this woman and to everybody around her, your faith is why you have been healed. Your faith in God is why you've been healed. He's making it clear, this is no magic act. You've really been healed, and it's by faith. You didn't buy a little concoction from the apothecary. You didn't say a special chant. Jesus, the God of the universe has actually healed you. This was no magic show. This was different. That his cloak was not like some kind of magical item, like a rabbit's foot, an amulet, or a charm. He makes it very clear. And this was a woman who had been ostracized. She had been bleeding, and in the Jewish code of the day, if you had some kind of bleeding condition, some kind of thing like that, you'd be considered unclean. You couldn't be around people. You had to announce when you were coming down the road, unclean, unclean, so people would know, oh, I don't want to brush up against this woman, who, ironically enough, is in the middle of this crowd, brushing up against Jesus and probably everybody else. She's been ostracized by society. But Jesus says that she can go and be freed from her affliction. She's integrated back in society. That's more than just being healed. Her society status has been reinstated. But he says, peace to you. She has peace about her now. All of the things that have been troubling her, think about what inner turmoil you would have if all your friends, all your family had nothing to do with you. This is before the days of phone, email. She's probably not even getting letters. No one has anything to do with her. All of her social network, so to speak, is gone. But Jesus said, go in peace. Forgetting what has behind, and she gets to move forward now. So he's found her, and he has done much more of a healing than just merely letting her touch him and go on. But also, he accentuates the positive. He could have said, oh, well, she's unclean. You can't go and touch a minister of the Lord when he's out to go heal somebody. But he gave her extra. He gave her more than she could have gotten on her own. But what about Jairus' daughter? You kind of almost forget about that when we're in the middle of this story. You go, oh, well, yeah, that's right. Jairus' daughter was about to die. What about that story? And I kind of picture Jairus kind of tapping his foot anxiously. Well, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Is Jesus going to heal my daughter? It's great what Jesus did here, but what about this little girl who was dying? So Jesus was on the way to go see Jairus' daughter, but he got interrupted. While he's handling this interruption, his interruption gets interrupted. That's how busy Jesus is. His interruptions are getting interrupted. The people from Jairus' household come and say, Jairus, your daughter is dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. And they don't even say this to Jesus. They don't even say this in front of Jesus. It's almost like it's off to the side, like they just want to say, okay, Jairus, just kind of fall back into the background. Let Jesus forget that he was even talking to you. Just fall back in the background and don't worry about it. Whatever you do, don't bother the teacher. In verse 36, overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, don't be afraid, just believe. And he goes into the house and he heals Jairus' daughter. He tells her, I say to you, get up, and tells the parents, get something for her to eat. It seems like it's too late. The daughter is dead, and it seems like it's time for Jairus just to hang his head and go on. Whatever you do, don't bother the teacher. And he says to them, don't be afraid, just believe. Now, why would he say that? Why would he say, don't be afraid? Because fear connotes uncertainty. If I'm afraid of something, I'm afraid of what might happen. I'm afraid that something might happen. I'm afraid something might not happen. But you're not afraid for what might happen to the dead. It's too late. But here Jesus is saying, don't be afraid. Because for Jesus, even in death, it's not over. Death is not a hurdle that Jesus can't jump over. This is the one who will come and conquer death. This is the one who, at the great resurrection, will raise people from the dead. And we see in the Gospels that he did raise people from the dead. So he's asking for a big step of faith. This woman has come forward. She didn't know Jesus. She's been ostracized by society. All of her doctors have told her that she can't be healed, that there's nothing they can do for her. The best in the land have come. She spent all of her income on it. And yet she had to have faith that Jesus could heal her. And now Jesus is asking Jairus for the same faith. Even more faith, really, because she's beyond just simple medicine. She's passed away. She's dead. Jesus is showing that he's not too busy to help, but also that there's no situation so dire that God can't intervene in the midst of it. He raises the girl from the dead to the astonishment of her parents. And rather than just leave, he takes the time to say, take care that she gets something to eat. He takes that much of attention to her needs. Now, there were a lot of people in that time that were reaching for Jesus, not just that day, and not just that woman who grabbed his garment. Jesus' ministry was full of interruptions. There was Peter who interrupted Jesus' prayer. At one point when Jesus is preaching, a leper interrupts his preaching. And another time he's preaching, a paralytic interrupts his preaching. There's instances when Jesus is on the way to go somewhere, and he's interrupted by a blind beggar, or he's interrupted by a woman who's outside of the Jewish faith but says, I know this Jesus is here for everybody, and insists on him hearing her. So what does this say for us in our lives today? I believe we all struggle a little bit with interruptions. Sure, we can juggle around several different things. We can be on our phone while we're checking our laptop and watching TV and having a conversation. We can multitask like we've never done before with lots of little minor things. But ask us to interrupt something that we're really intently focused on, something that's really important to us, and it's a little bit of a different story. And if you don't think this applies to you, think about how many things in your life that are interruptions have you said no to. You say, I just don't have time for this. I don't have time to focus on dieting or exercise. I don't have time for that interruption. I don't have time to worry about this thing or that thing because I'm focusing on my career. I don't have time for those other things. I don't have time to go see family. I'm too busy. I don't have time to play with my kids because I'm watching TV. Christian author Henry Nouwen once said, you know, my whole life I've been complaining that my work was constantly interrupted until I discovered that the interruptions were my work. See, we ask God to give us a vision for the lost. Give me some kind of mission, God, some way that I can share the gospel for you. And then we hope that people don't interrupt that mission when the people are the mission. It's like we're waiting for a phone call from God, and then someone shows up and say, no, I can't answer you. I can't answer your call right now because I'm waiting for a phone call from God. When all we need to do is pick up the phone, God is ringing. He's sending us an opportunity. He's sending someone in our path, an interruption perhaps, but the people are the mission. Now, a great way to make sure that people don't interrupt your mission is to act like you're so put off by them and they just don't come around anymore. And that's what a wonderful way to hang up the phone on God, right? We talk about spreading the gospel to the four corners of the earth. But what if God is constantly sending us people to the four corners of the room that we're in to spread the gospel where we are? What if we don't see people as opportunities because we're considering them as interruptions or nuisances, something that we can't deal with right now? No, I can't deal with this person because I have something I've got to do for God. When God's over there saying, this was it. This is what I sent for you. You're ignoring my call on your life. So God is calling. Will you answer? Are you too busy? He's putting opportunities before you to share the gospel. Will you share the gospel? Now, perhaps he's calling you to join the church. Will you let him interrupt you for a moment? You might think, well, I don't have time to commit to a church. I don't need anything else to interrupt my life. It's really busy. But I'll tell you a little secret, I guess I should say, or it's one of those little paradoxes of the faith that just don't seem to make sense, but it's just a God thing. We talk about how if you give to God, that he will give you back more than you put in. And we usually use that to talk about our finances. We say, you know, when we give to God, you give him $100, and then suddenly you find $200 in your bank account, something like that. But you know, that actually applies to your time as well. That you give time to God, and then suddenly you find you have time free at the end of the day or time free at the weekend. You don't really know how it got there. You had allotted certain time to get certain things done, and then suddenly those things are done. You have all this free time. And I've experienced that in my own life, and the only explanation is God had to have worked that out. Because I should not have had that free time. I should not have had that free moment. And I think back, well, I spent time with God. I guess he gave it back. So I challenge you, if you are thinking about joining the church, participating in some of the things that we do, you think, well, I just don't have time. I don't have time for those interruptions. Test God in this and see if he doesn't give you more time back. if God is calling you forward to come forward and join, maybe you want to kneel at, I know we don't have a physical altar, but this is kind of our altar. Maybe if you want to kneel at the altar, maybe there's something in your own life that you need to surrender to God. Whatever that thing is that keeps you from him, maybe there's something that's interrupting you from him. Why not let God interrupt your interruption? Why not let God interrupt that? Why don't you come forward as we sing this last song?